Good morning to you, sisters and brothers, saints and sinners, people of Lutheran Church of the Cross, guests, all are welcome, all who are welcome, children of God and disciples of Christ. I love to start my Sunday off with a Jesus miracle story. With one of our gospel readings that tell the story of Jesus performing one of his miracles. And here we have this woman who is bent over for a full long 18 years of her life. And as somebody pointed out to me today, we might think of that as osteoporosis. But back in those days, it was a woman who was bent over and who she just happened to come into the synagogue while Jesus was there. And Jesus immediately called to this woman because he immediately noticed her, bade her to come to him. He spoke some words telling her that she was healed, and he touched her. And then immediately, we like to use this word immediately in this gospel, immediately upon being touched, she stood up and raised her hands in the only way she could have possibly done at that moment. She went from here to here. Freed from this bondage of illness, a life she'd become accustomed to and undoubtedly accepted as her lot in life. She was never going to change. This was always going to be the way she was. She was now filled with such gratitude that she could do nothing except raise her hands to heaven and give all the glory to God. Now, also, classic in Luke, in Jesus' miracle stories, we find a foil to Jesus in the guise of this leader of the synagogue. And all it says is that he is a leader. It could be anyone, a rabbi, a Pharisee, or just some well-concerned citizen, concerned for the well-being of his people. And it makes no difference who he is. And while it's perfectly acceptable for Jesus to be teaching in the synagogue on the Sabbath, because that is what one did on the Sabbath, never mind that there's a little bit of work involved in that, miraculous feats are a definite no-no and must be discouraged. A statement this gentleman persists in repeating over and over again to all the gathered people, those who will listen and probably those who really didn't care what he had to say. But he only wanted what was best for his people. He only wanted to do the right thing. Now, and one might think that 18 years is an awful long time for someone to be in the same condition. And what does it matter that she wait one more day to get healed? You know, don't come on Sunday, come on Monday. We'll be here. Particularly if it means not violating this all-important commandment of honor the Lord's day and keep it holy. And this poor guy just wanting to do the right thing, Jesus turns it around on him and calls him a hypocrite in front of God, the synagogue, the entire crowd, and everyone. And what a humiliating onslaught that must have been for him to be called out like that in front of all the people in such a way. It's something that he probably knew in his heart was maybe a little bit wrong for him to do. It probably took him a little bit of courage just to tell Jesus, no, don't do that thing. And then he could persist in doing that. And now Jesus calls him out. And also, when Jesus points out the unbinding of a woman from her long illness and compares this to the entire untying of a beast of burden only to receive water. Now, try not to make too much of that comparison of between the woman and the beast. That might be a little bit, we don't want to read too much into that. But the crowd was indeed amazed. Indeed amazed. And I think it becomes pretty clear that the leader of the synagogue, for all his good intent, is missing something out of the event. He's missing something crucial. Although he wants to do the right thing, in his criticism of Jesus' act, He is, in fact, not aware that Jesus is doing something more than casual healing. When Jesus compares this to the unbinding of an ox to receive water, he's saying that he's freeing this woman from 18 years of bondage. This is something that the people of Israel knew and understood because their stories, their history knows about bondage and about freedom from bondage. Because they had freedom from bondage from the Pharaoh. And they had freedom from their bondage in Persia. And so even when we listen to, we look at Luke's listeners who were not necessarily Jewish people, we can still go deeper into these connotations, because for many of them, the condition of the woman was not just this random illness. It wasn't something that happened to her at the onset of menopause. It was the result of some evil that she probably did sometime in her life, or the evil that somebody cast upon her in revenge for something. And so it was tied to sin and Satan's power. And so when Jesus laid on his hands to this woman, he was not just freeing her from the illness, he was freeing her from the bondage of sin and Satan. And what other day but the Sabbath to do that? Is it any wonder that the first thing she did was fold her hands up in the air and gave thanks to God? I am so grateful for all that God has done for me. And we can tie this scene to something, some words that take place later on in Luke, when Jesus foretells a future event, when the Son of Man comes in a cloud of power and glory, and for the listeners of Luke's gospel to stand up and raise their hands, because in their redemption, their release from the captivity is coming near. And who can be the one to take away that special meaning for this woman? Be it on the Sabbath or even any other day, be it in the temple or the synagogue or on the street, wherever it took place. She was released from her bonds and filled with gratitude, unwavering, and raised her hands to God. Now, 2,000 years later, in the church, sometimes we can be the decider of what must and what must not be. Now, I have been in congregations where the slightest disruption will set the pastor off, or at least the ushers, to go shifting someone out of the back seat who's making a little bit of unnecessary noise, or maybe a baby is crying a little bit, or just talking too much. A wailing child, maybe in the middle of a sermon, would stop the work of, as if a wailing child could stop the work of God's hands during the service. What could be more beautiful music to God than the sound of one of the little ones wailing during a worship service? And thankfully, we here at Lutheran Church of the Cross have learned to work with the odd noise and disruption. And we hear it on the street, and sometimes we hear it right here in the sanctuary. And sometimes people make noises that they don't intend to. And I wonder about other things, legalistic or otherwise. I'm not sure if it would do us honor if I didn't mention that Christians can take a very limited and sometimes out of context interpretation of 6 biblical passages to deny sexual minorities a place at the table during worship. And it continues to happen even today. I probably read 2 articles on Facebook this week about LGBT people not being accepted in churches. It was barely 40 years ago that Lutheran churches wouldn't think of having a woman in the pulpit because of this single reading of 1 Corinthians. And less so from a few other passages, as if Paul, who, to be perfectly honest, was somewhat pick and choose when he came to when it came to the law, as if he was writing that about this whole thing about women not speaking during worship, that he was talking about the nature of the ministry of word and sacrament. I think Paul was addressing a few specific issues in a specific context in Corinth where certain women were disrupting the congregation. And maybe Paul was a little bit hard-edged when it came to that. But sisters and brothers, when Jesus calls, Jesus calls. And to take a page out of my own history, I ran screaming from the church when Jesus first called me. Because I did not think myself to be suitable to be a minister. Never mind the fact that those years of wilderness, I do give thanks for the time I spent away from the church because I learned a great deal about myself and the nature of sin and darkness and the power of the devil. And the nature of what kind of things can bring us down to those depths. A unique insight into the sacred and profane. But I could also not imagine myself being some kind of pioneer spitting into the face of the established hierarchy. That wasn't for me. No, I had to come some decades later when others had laid the path out for me. And God bless our forerunners in the Metropolitan Community Church who offered people at a place at the table, both in feasting and the administering of God's holy presence. And who do we think we are when we tell people that they cannot partake in the offering that God has laid out for us? And I tell you, my sisters and brothers, there is no doubt in my mind that the characteristic of one's physical attraction is laid out very early in one's life, either before one's birth, and whether it happens to be a happenstance of genetics or hormones, it nevertheless is not a choice or changeable by any definition of the word. And furthermore, God made us in God's image. God's image. Man and woman God made us. This is very early on in Genesis. Man and woman God made us in God's image. And if God's image is not limited to male and female, how can we say that one person is not permitted to preside at God's table by nature based on her birth? There are settled matters in our congregation. This is not really an issue for Lutheran Church of the Cross, whether or not a woman or a person or a sexual minority can preside at the table. But it still happens everywhere, even in the ELCA. So we might still be the outlier. For even our denomination has a long way to go to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to serve God as God calls us. I consider myself privileged to have lived at a certain time when a congregation such as LCC would have called me because I don't know what other opportunities would have been for me in the world. So, with that said, my sisters and brothers, is there anything that we might be stifling here because of what we see as the law? I don't know. I can't answer that question. I cannot see through the eyes of everybody that walks in these doors, whether we know them or not. You know, occasionally some people show up and never show up again. And then other people, and I have no idea whether the reasons why they show up and don't show up again are because of something that we've done or just, you know, wasn't right for them or just they were just visiting from out of town. My heart breaks when I have to tell somebody that they're banned from our property. That happens from time to time. Because I don't know where Jesus stands in such instances. And these are people who, granted, they threaten the safety of people here in our midst. And we live in a town where it happens a lot. People come in off the street, a little bit out of their heads. But Jesus, I remember Jesus rescued a demoniac named Legion. He rescued a man from a demoniac named Legion, who within this, his possessions, this demon had caused this man to eschew clothing itself and run around attacking people where he lived. Jesus touched the untouchable, and they were made whole, following him and relishing in his glory. These people became the people of God. How can we hide behind obscure biblical passages and our longtime prejudices in order to avoid the call to be this healing balm for our fellow human beings in the community and the world at large? This is the Sabbath. We are God's people. Now, earlier we heard from Isaiah, and I'm going to reread a few verses from Isaiah. It's chapter 58, verses 13 and 14. If you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, serving your own interests, or pursuing your own affairs, you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride upon the heights of the earth. This morning, let us take delight in the Sabbath. Let us pursue God's interests and not our own. Let us remember that sometimes when we take things out of context, it might serve our interests and not God's. Let us not keep people from God. Let us remember the greatest commandment, that we love God with all our heart and all our soul and all our strength and all our minds, and we find ways to love our neighbors as ourselves, even if sometimes we have to keep those neighbors off our property. Finding God's will in all of our affairs and his good news in everything we do. Amen.